Of the year, that's not too bad.
That's all right. It's Tuesday, January 25th, 2011. This is the House Hess Committee, the first meeting of House Hess in the 27th Legislature. And let the record reflect that we have a quorum. Present are Representative Herron, Representative Miller, Representative Dick, and Representative Millett. And I think we'll be joined by some others here shortly. First up today on the agenda, we're going to have just a committee orientation and a little bit of an introduction by the members. And we're going to start with Representative Assistant because she has a have to leave here. A little bit of reference. So anyway, we're going to start today. Kind of an unusual start maybe, but just I'm going to try to get you to talk about yourself a little bit. And I send a series of questions to the members, and I'll prompt you as you go if you like. But we'll start with Representative Sista and give you a chance to introduce yourself. Anything you want to tell us about background, interest, family, go for it.
Thank you. And you actually had a list of things that we were supposed to be talking about in terms of ourselves.
We did, yes. It went out.
Thank you very much.
That's all right. I'll prompt you, so I'll be very careful to express the questions to you.
Okay. Describe family, background, and interests. I think we're going to be talking about a senior bill today, and I must admit that I was born 68 plus years ago. So that puts me in that category, and we don't have 68 years to go to go in my background. But I did grow up in the state of Washington and had many interests, but the interest that won out was an interest in children first, families, and human well-being. And that's actually the thing that I've followed as an interest for many years, and did work my way through school. And the area that that actually won out was first a bachelor's degree in sociology, and then one in counseling psychology, and then I tried but didn't get completely through public administration. So I think I actually was setting myself up through the years for a position in the state legislature, and did have for 27 years a small business that was a home-based business, but was able to produce a living working on publications for many different groups, and a lot of volunteer work. Park issues are probably the big issue that I have been very interested in and worked on consistently. And I think that's a summary.
Thank you, Representative Sista. I just wanted to say that Representative Hawker is online. He is going to be presenting the bill, HB 16, a little later, but I just wanted you to know that he was there. Representative Sista, what do you do in your spare time? I mean, you don't have any legislative things in front of you, and you just want to kick back and do something. What's fun to you? I know some of the things you do, and so what's fun?
Well, my husband and I adore getting out and exploring. And exploring might be on a street in our neighborhood, or it might be in the mountains around Anchorage. It might be getting into the canoe and going down the Tanana and the Yukon. And there are several people in this room that we have visited in some of our explorations. I adore gardening. I love beading and sketching and things like that.
So, yeah, thanks. Why did you choose to serve on the committee? It's a matter of choice that we're all here. And so, you know, you can't say somebody had to do it. That's not good enough. But why did you pick?
Well, probably the dominant reason, to be perfectly honest, is that my district is the center of health and education for Alaska. It's a university medical area in Anchorage. And I am able to represent certainly the businesses are the health and education businesses for the state, but a huge number of the people who work in health and education in Alaska, that serve Alaska, are in my district. And just because of who I serve is one of the reasons why we're visiting many communities, is because really those are actually the patients and the students that come to my district. But also I think it's really important to know the people of the state, and the committee in the legislature that really does use the most money in the state funding. The single largest department that spends the most money is Health and Social Services, and it is a responsibility.
Yes. Thank you. I think you've told us a little bit about yourself, and I appreciate it. One last question that I've asked everybody to respond to. What do you think the most challenging issue that is ahead of us as a committee, you know, that we have to deal with or should deal with or will deal with?
Well, I think the most important thing in my mind is that we have enormous problems in this state that have been problems since I first came to Alaska in 1967, that we've not dealt with, that grew because the state was changing, and that the state was started thousands of years ago as a place for people to live, and it's changed very recently away from what it had been, and that is a place that was always looking out, people were looking out for each other, that they lived in communities and families where there was a constant effort at making sure that they were successfully surviving. And we're in a challenging time. I believe that this committee is a place where we can actually get to know the people across the state, and where we can do the best job in terms of creating good health policy for the state, not just as an institution, but as a place to live.
Okay, thank you. Representative Millett, it's your turn. Would you introduce yourself and tell us what you like, and if you don't address the questions you noticed, I will ask you.
Okay.
so it's fair across the board, and I'll answer it myself, so go ahead.
Thanks, Chairman Keller. I'm honored to be on this committee. I think it's a great committee. Like Representative Sisson said, one-third of our budget goes to health and social services, so it's a very important committee. We have an aging population of seniors. I'm happy to see the senior benefit bill we're hearing today to extend those benefits. I think there's that's going to be one of the biggest problems facing Alaska, is challenges fiscally and socially on how do we deal with that aging population. My background, I have three children and recently become a grandmother, which is great. It gave me a whole new perspective on life. My background is airline management. I worked for an airline for 25 years prior to coming to the legislature. My interests are like every other Alaskan, you know, enjoying the beautiful scenery we have, hunting, fishing, and recently my main interest is my grandchild. So those are my interests. Like I said, the HES committee, why I chose to be here is, you know, one-third of our budget is on HES and health and social services. And we have a lot of important issues, not only the senior issues, but also domestic violence, suicide rates. There's a lot of things that we can do on this committee to affect change for a lot of Alaskans. What we do here touches every corner of the state, and I think it's important that we take a look at all possibilities of remedies for some of the things that we're facing as Alaskans. The most challenging issue, I think I addressed, that you can't rank them. They're all challenging that this committee deals with. They're emotional. I have been exposed to the healthcare systems in Alaska in a couple different ways. Both my parents had cancer, and watched my dad, who was 64 at the time, go through cancer. And at 64, he was under his private insurance, which is a great federal program. My mom was a little older and in the Medicare program. And then myself, I was in the Indian Health Services program. So with every aspect of that, I've gained a much different view of health care because of those experiences. And so I'm glad that I get to put those to use for some good in the state. The things that are important to me are, I would really like to start addressing some of the domestic violence, drug abuse, sexual abuse, crimes against children. The suicide rates are astounding, and I think that's something that we should focus on in this committee. So thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you. Does the committee have any questions that they want to put the gentleman on the spot? For her, that you may want to ask.
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. Representative Miller, how old is your grandchild?
Halen is 3 months.
Oh, brand new.
15 pounds.
Congratulations.
Okay, thank you. What I'm going to do is switch down to Representative Heron, because I know Bob, and I know that it'll be an enlightening introduction that he makes. I want to interrupt the process here a little bit. Just thank you for indulging me in this little exercise. I think it will be helpful. But go ahead, Representative Heron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate the opportunity. This is my second term in the legislature. Came to Alaska in 1968 with my family, and have been here ever since. My work background has mostly been a businessman, but I was the city manager of Bethel for 7 years, served on the Lower Cuscum School District for 10 years, 2 years with the congressional delegation, Ted Stevens, Lisa Murkowski, and Don Young, and then a couple years at the Health Corporation in Bethel. So that was in part one of the reasons that I was able to serve on this committee the last 2 years, and I made a commitment to the chairman that I would support him as single co-chair and serve on this committee. The challenging issue or issues facing us is, I will echo what other members have said, but, elder care, suicide, anything that has to do with children and how we can protect them. You know, obviously it's a huge bureaucracy, and maybe there are some inefficiencies and issues that we can work on together. Probably the most important one, or the most challenging, let me rephrase that, the most challenging issue is probably going to be Medicaid and how we deal with it. The governor has given us a challenge by not putting, I can't remember the number, $123 million plus, not in the budget, so we're going to have to figure out and work with the governor. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate him being here, and look forward to working with you and the other members.
Does anyone have any questions they'd like to throw at Representative Heron? Thanks. Representative Miller, if you would introduce yourself.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity. I really like the fact that we're getting to know each other before we get into the nuts and bolts of all this. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a great opportunity. I came to Alaska in 1988 from the East Coast. Most of my background has been in telecommunications, consulting, and sales, et cetera. But as many Alaskans, I've often found that one job usually isn't enough. So during my 30-odd years of working in telecom, I've also been a news anchor on a couple of the TV stations in Fairbanks, off and on, here and there, sometimes part-time, sometimes full-time. I was the news director up there for 7 years at Channel 11. And then, as if that wasn't enough, I would also run across town in the summertime and perform in theater venues for the tourists, et cetera, at the Malamute Saloon, being a director, banjo player, bad joke teller, et cetera. So that's where I'm from. Met my lovely bride, an Alaskan lass, up here in 19, 1989 on August the 29th at 3:30 in the afternoon. The world stood still, and it's pretty much the same ever since then. She already had three boys. We figured that was enough. We raised them up and got them out of the house. We now enjoy two grandchildren, so we know sort of where you are, Representative. We appreciate your point of view. You're in for a real adventure with those guys. As far as what I do when I'm not working, I do enjoy writing. I sometimes fancy myself a playwright, a songwriter. I've written two albums worth of questionable music, but they're finished nonetheless. You can buy one out in the lobby if you wish. I enjoy reading quite a bit. If I was independently wealthy, I imagine I would spend my entire time studying nothing but history and language. Music, performing is still a piece of what I enjoy doing, and we very much enjoy international travel when we can afford it. We managed to get ourselves to Bolivia 3 years ago, and it was an amazing and eye-opening experience. You may hear me through the course of my term here making some comparisons between Bolivia being an incredibly mineral and resource-rich country, and yet it's the second poorest country in the hemisphere, and making comparisons with, you know, what's possible here in Alaska as well. There are many similarities. We're doing much better than they are, but we could do even better. The reason that I chose to be on the Health and Social Services Committee was because I found myself just always asking the question, why did I run for office at all? Very simple. I wanted to serve. I wanted to help. And I cannot think that anything is more important than service to your fellow man, which, of course, is what Health and Social Services is all about. It's pointed out right in the language in our Alaska Constitution, which I found just a wonderful thing that the founding fathers of the state saw fit to put it right in there, that is part of our obligation to ourselves and to our fellows who choose to live here. It's no secret. I don't think anybody would be surprised to know that almost all of the bad statistics in the world on domestic violence, drinking, drug abuse, rape, incest, sexual assault, we lead the nation in all of these. And that is just a miserable, miserable record. And we're going to be the folks, I think, that can most affect a better remedy for those situations. So I'm hoping to be of great help in that pursuit, shall we say. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Miller. Did you respond to what you think the biggest challenge? If you did, maybe I drifted there a bit.
I don't think I specified that there are so many challenges, and they all sort of dovetail into one another. It's not the model that I see happening in life is not so much like a clock. When a clock goes bad, you can take it apart, find one of the components that's gone bad, and replace it. But human experience, life experience, the way the biology of the world works isn't quite as simple. One piece really has more of an impact on another than just being that one cog like in a clock. The interconnectedness of all things is more profound than just fixing it. You know, you might look at a tree and you say it's a tree, but, you know, the tree doesn't sit there by itself. It's part of a forest, which is part of a larger canopy. And, of course, there's 100,000 species of critters and bugs and bacteria and fungus and so forth that not only live off of the tree but also provide the tree with everything it needs to be alive as well. So that's kind of a broad statement.
Yeah, oh, that's all right. Thank you. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Not at all.
Again, you know, thank the committee for indulging me in this try. It may be a clumsy start, but I thought, hey, why not? Give it a shot. You know,
yes. I appreciate the opportunity.
Did you have a question, Representative Herron?
Representative Miller, what's your favorite Robert Service poem?
My favorite Robert Service poem is probably one that I can't recite in here, and that would be Bessie's Boil. It's my mother's favorite as well.
And one of mine is Representative Dick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I tell people the last time I was a freshman was 1963 at the University of Maine. I feel the same way. I come up the stairwell, and what floor am I on, and which way do I turn? And I made some of the similar mistakes. So I was born in, my dad called it, Taxachusetts on the East Coast, and came to Alaska in 1966. I've been here 44 years. I married my wife, Helen, who's Dene in Athabaskan. She's a recognized culture bearer. Married her 42 years ago. Yesterday, we had our anniversary. And we have 5 children, 14 grandkids, and 4 great-grandchildren. So when I started out in Alaska, I lived almost all 44 years in the bush, small villages. First 12, 14, 15 years, we lived subsistence. I made my living trapping. You know, I'd skin the marten, fur buyers skinned me, and we went firefighting in the summer, which was great until we had a rainy summer, and then it wasn't so great. And I worked construction, which was great until there was, you know, no jobs in the country. And I can remember a couple times, one summer where I walked 4 round trips to Sperrvon Air Force Base, which is 18 miles away, 36-mile round trip to walk, 4 round trips to make $1,000 with a pick, yeah, and running a number 2 shovel. But that was the only money in the country. I worked at Red Devil Mine back in the days when there weren't any environmentalists at all, and that's how mining ought not to be. But I was I drilled blast muck, I ran the mill, hoistman, I did most of the jobs in Red Devil Mine. When I was about early 30s, it dawned on me I had to support my family some way, because the other ways were unreliable, and I decided to become a teacher. And so in 79, I got my degree from the University of Alaska Fairbanks in cross-cultural education. I taught in small villages. I tell people I was the best teacher in Tulalip. Simultaneously the worst. I did Iditarod School District, which was bigger than the state of Ohio with only 365 children at the time. And I did many jobs for the Iditarod School District besides classroom teacher, correspondence principal. I did the health science math curriculum. I was a voc ed coordinator and many other jobs with the Iditarod School District. After that, I worked with Alaska Rural Systemic Initiative, traveled for over 8 years from Sitka to Barrow, from Unalaska to even Whitehorse, Canada, not all but many villages. I did culture and science camps where I would have to watch the elders in a camp interact with the young people. And it was my assignment to draw a science project out of that interaction and work on the student with that project. They'd take it to the classroom, and then I ran the regional and state fairs, and hopefully could get some of them down to Albuquerque, New Mexico in the National Fair. We did send 2 boys from Circle, got first place in Nationals in physics with an experiment on which is better, you know, natural synthetic fur or natural fur, and they did great science. So that's what I did there for many, many years. In the last couple of years, I worked with the COSI, which is a similar thing, helping students find locally, culturally relevant science projects out of just their backyard. You know, we don't need science out of a textbook in Texas. You can't avoid science in Alaska. People ask me what I do for a living. I sit in an airplane, and I tell them I write romance. And they, oh, what kind of romance? I tell them I try to create a love affair between young people in science and young people in math, and that's what I do. So I wrote village science, village math, northern science. I've done a lot of books trying to, again, show the kids the relevance of, you know, academic concepts to their village and their lifestyle. For several years, my wife and I, she's a culture bearer for the Heritage Center. So we've done videos, trying to video document a lot of the traditional activities. If you've been to the Tenaya Cultural Center, you might remember on the second floor there's a fish trap. Well, my wife and I built that. And we've built fish traps for the Anchorage Museum and done video videography on that. So you could watch the video and you could build your own fish trap. So my wife is very talented with traditional skills. They fly her all over the state doing birch baskets. And she recently made a raincoat out of bear guts and sold that to the Anchorage Museum, and it's on display. So that's the type of things that we really would like to do before this generation passes, to video document all of those things so that the next generation could watch the video and they could go out and do it even after we're gone. In my free time, well, I'm a grandpa and a great-grandpa, so that keeps me pretty busy. I'm a pilot, but I didn't start flying until I was 60 years old, like kind of a late bloomer. But way before that, I got a powered parachute, and I fly the powered parachute. It's a hoot. I've built boats. I've built over 30 boats, river boats, not ocean boats. I have a hovercraft, and I really do enjoy videography, doing video editing and all. To me, it's just a way I can express the creative urge that I have. I tell people I did one video for on math, and it was on matrices and simultaneous equations. And the viewing hasn't been too broad yet, but I'm going to get it out there. And the reason I really, really wanted to be on this committee was I've lived in villages for 44 years. I don't have answers, but I've watched the transition, and I love the old-timers. I just love them. They had their own brand of dysfunction, but I loved them. But I've watched the changes, and I think a lot of the negative things that have occurred are just because there hasn't been the reflection necessary. I've never heard anybody yet say, what's the best of Anchorage and what's the best of the village and how can we amalgamate, how can we synthesize and come up with the best of both. I haven't heard that conversation, or not with any depth at all. So I think a lot of the problems we're facing now is that just by default we've just maybe taken the easiest of both worlds instead of made that decision to, you know, maybe press through and do the better, you know, do the better. We can talk about suicide as being one of the big problems, but I think suicide is just a symptom. And I need to clarify, there's many very, very healthy, good families that have that very problem. And we're not saying that every suicide is the result of dysfunction. Not at all. There's some wonderful families that have experienced that. But suicide, I believe, is a symptom. It's a symptom of a imbalance, of a dysfunction. I think in most villages we see this the village dynamic, and they're all different. Yupik villages, even Yupik village to Yupik village, they're different. But at the, all the Athabaskan, Tlingit, Haida, Tsimshian, Tsugpiak, Lutik, up and down, all over, they're all, they have their own flavor, their own characteristic. At the same time, there's the state input into all the villages. That's one of the variables in the social experiment that's going on. Then there's the federal government that has, and so there's a lot of scientists kind of brewing around here. And I really believe that if I have a one-word answer for the villages, it has to be accountability. Accountability of the state government and the programs that we place there. We just can't put them there and then turn our back and not look and observe. And did it do any good? Or did it do harm? And the federal government at the same time. I'll give you an example. There was a village I could name that recently got $250,000 for roads. And nobody in town has ever had a car or a truck. Sure. There's four four-wheelers and only two of them run. And yet the federal government saw fit to give $250,000 to that village for roads. So there's many variables going on into the village dynamic that kind of don't make sense, and if you try to make sense, it's really distressing. Mm-hmm. So I really believe accountability on the part of the state and federal governments as they try to give help, give assistance to villages. We need to observe, and is what we're giving the money for, is it producing the result we want? And at the same time, I really believe the people in villages need to accept full responsibility for their own future, their own being, and just seize the day and just really think through all these. I really would like to recommend the book Uyuruk, The Way of the Human Being by Harold Napoleon. As I've studied cross-cultural education, it's one of the most powerful books that I've read. It's not thick, but it'll really give you insight into the dynamic of what is going on in the village and why it's going on. So I don't have all the answers, but you know, I will say that, you know, like there was a time when we had foster kids, we had all kinds of kids. Anybody needed a home or a meal, they showed up on our door. And one time we had two foster boys, and we walked in, and one of the boys had committed suicide, and it just, it wasn't like it was my own child, and so I didn't have that complete sense of failure that you might sense for a time. But I didn't realize, but it was maybe two decades that impact, that reverberated with our, within our own family. Now, I'm not trying to minimize, you know, the fact that it was a foster child. It still impacted us. But it took us two decades and for us to recover from all that spun off out of that, that event. I can mention Cynthia Erickson sitting in the back. I talked with her daughter recently, and she said that in her graduating class in Tanana, there was six students in the graduating class. She's 22 years old. There's three survivors out of six. Already, there's half of the graduating class is no longer with us. So there is a dynamic there. I really believe step one of the 12-step program has to be get out of denial. You've got to name the truth. If the carburetor is having problems, you can overhear, you can work on that muffler all you want. You can get grants, you can get second opinions, you can polish that, you can do all you want to that muffler. And if the carburetor or the fuel injector is a problem, then you've got to identify the problem, speak to that problem. I don't think it's not rocket science. We're human beings. We all have the same passions and urges. But I do believe that part of the problem we encounter here is geography. There's many people in urban areas that have a better understanding of Afghanistan and Iraq than they do Nunamikwa or Luggnagg. So part of our problem is geography. So that's maybe what I could offer to this group is that I've been there 44 years, and I have some perceptions, I have some insights, and certainly don't have the last word.
Thank you so much, and your passion is contagious, and thank you. Is there any questions for Representative? Representative Seaton, I know you know what's going on because you were watching this on TV before you got here. and the rest of the committee has, indulged the process. I invite you to introduce yourself and try to respond to the questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. But I was going to watch it on the DVR so because I was in a meeting. So I will catch up after tonight. But I am the representative from Homer and Seward. I've been on the HESS committee for 8 years. The HESS committee represents a lot of the issues that are important to my constituents, whether they're senior citizens or whether they're folks that are dealing with, all of the issues that this committee does, with whether it's developmental disorders or mental health or health issues. So there's a broad application of this committee and its work to the folks that I represent. And that's basically why I chose to be on this committee. My wife is down here in Juneau with me, which is very good to have the family unit together. And I have two kids. My son is, I think, 29 now. My daughter is married, and she's back in Minnesota. She's 32. And so, anyway, that's kind of where I come from. My background is that I was born and raised in Southern California and went to school in junior college and Ventura College and started at the University of California, Santa Barbara. And then came up here on vacation, fell in love with the place. I was a lapidary in my youth, so I came up here on a rock hounding expedition.
How old were you?
What's that?
At what age?
That was between junior in college, between sophomore and junior. And so after my junior year at UC Santa Barbara, I transferred to the University of Alaska Fairbanks and graduated up there and taught for a year at Fort Wainwright State Operated Schools, and then I went outside and taught 2 years in high school and got a Master's of Marine Science or Master of Science in Marine Zoology at San Diego State, and just basically really enjoyed the fishing more than academic research, so I came up here permanently. And then got into the fishing industry. I'd been in that because I was going to have a muskox farm. I also was a acting herd manager for the Muskox Ranch when it was up in Fairbanks, and had done some research on them, and was going to have a Muskox farm, and got a boat to start doing that, and the lease on the land fell through, and so became a fisherman. Found I liked that. So anyway, commercial fisherman for 19 years in Cook Inlet, and halibut fished as well, and now I'm a tender operator. I have fishing vessel that tenders. I'm not actively catching fish anymore. And so that's kind of my background, where I come from, small business owner. And I guess the most important thing that I'm looking at for Hess is that I would like to see us lead the state and incorporate with the state in developing a prevention model for healthcare instead of our current treatment model of healthcare. We almost everything we do is talking about, okay, people get sick, and then we worry about treating the disease. And so one of the things, and I appreciate your scheduling a hearing on the 17th of February on vitamin D, and it looks like if with the population studies from all around the world, we can probably prevent 50% of the breast cancer and 50% of the colon cancer, 40% of the bladder cancer. We can almost eliminate type 1 diabetes and have significant impact not only on type 2 diabetes, but also having adequate vitamin D is as effective as influenza vaccines. And since we have now gone to the position of not going to be offering vaccines to adults, or subsidized vaccines to adults, turns out we can get adequate vitamin D to people for about, one-fourth of the cost of a single vaccine, and accomplish not only that but all these other goals, as well as some of the work you're talking about on depressions and suicide. I mean, there's the data is that adequate vitamin D is much more effective in seasonal affective disorder than is light therapy. So I think we have great potential for moving our state into a prevention model. And not only with vitamin D, but there's all the other, and I'm really encouraged that the governor is working now on prevention of domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And I think that we can, if we move into the prevention area, we can expend a lot more less money. But the big thing is that we have a lot less consequences for people's lives in our state, and we'll be a healthier, not only physically but mentally healthier population if we proceed in that direction. So that's my goal, for hoping that this committee can be the lead on moving us into that kind of a realm of prevention model for the future.
Thank you, Representative Seaton. I suppose if I did it to you, I got to do it too. But I just want to point out that you can see the diversity, and it's great. I think we're working together. We'll be able to do some fun things. I'm the representative from Wasilla, Alaska. I was appointed in 2007, and before that, I was a staffer. In fact, my first staffing job was in this room, health and social services aide, Jan's job, back in 1999. You'd think with that longevity, I would know it all, but this is a real humbling committee to serve on, because it's the complexities are amazing. Like just the difference between Medicare and Medicaid, the average person on the street doesn't understand it, and it just takes time to pick it up. But anyway, I'm that isn't a boastful statement, that I've been here a long time, but it's a fact. So health and social services has been part of my life for quite a while. I chose to serve because of that background. I think, as you'll find out, and the members that have been on the committee, Representative Sista, Representative Hare, and Representative Seaton, in the past, know that you pick up the information, then you feel like you have a something you owe and you need to keep on, you know, and so that the some information gets passed on. Probably the most challenging committee in my or issue, I should say, facing not just the committee but the whole picture of healthcare is whether or not we can keep up the access and the quality with the economic crisis that's going on, cost increases. It's huge, and not it's real intimidating because I don't know what a House HES committee can really do about that directly. I think your approach, Representative Seaton, is excellent. You know, a change in model to include preventative care, very, very significant. I don't know how many people realize it, but it's about 18% of Alaskans are on Medicaid. That's one in five. You know, you look at any group and you just think about that. One in five on Medicaid, we're talking $1.5 billion a year now. And again, my concern is, are we going to be able to maintain this? You know, and I think we need to look at the models that we're using and the programs and the processes that are in shape and do it even though it's painful sometimes and with the thought in mind that we want to sustain the care for the people that need it the most. Because really, I mean, you talk a lot of talk about different roles of government. One of the most significant ones is to take care of those that really need the help. And that's this that falls on the shoulders of this committee in a very large way. So, again, I just would thank you for your serving on the committee, and I look forward to good things. I had no idea that you were going to run a muskox farm. but that was partly to say that this is partly for the benefit of the new members and also those of us that know. Representative Seaton is the one that has a seniority on the committee, and I think, right? How 8 years have you? Can you beat that?
I'm thinking it's 10.
Well, it's 10?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm remembering.
Okay, yeah. Thank you for your long service. And before we proceed to the bill, I want to do I want to rattle on a little bit about some just housekeeping things, just a review of the process that we go through here. It won't take that long. There's two kinds of hearings. One is a bill hearings, and the other, of course, is information and advisory type hearings where somebody comes to make a presentation. Representative Seaton mentioned the prevention presentation is coming on. I'm mentioning this because if any of you have something like that, please talk to me. Starting Thursday, we're going to have the department in here, and they're going to give us an overview of HES. And so come prepared to ask questions and, you know, look at the online. There's a lot of valuable information there, so you have maybe some questions. The Alaska Health Commission, I serve on Alaska Health Commission. We'll have a presentation here soon coming from them. That's the kind of informational things. Besides the bill hearings, of course, are the most important ones. As an aside, our schedule, we're scheduled for Tuesday, Thursday, 3 to 5, and Saturday. But my goal or my hope is that we really won't have to meet on Saturday, but be prepared if we get bogged down. That's the approach we will go there if we need to. Absentee policy in the committee, I would just advise that you use a piece of paper, get Janet to initial it off. We're not going to be here. And the reason is it's really embarrassing if we get together as a committee and we don't have a quorum and it falls on your shoulder. You know, you're the one that didn't tell us, you know, we all got together anyway, just for, you know, just so we're working together better. You don't have to have a piece of paper, but let us know. You know, let Janet or I know. Over the years here, I'm sure some of you the same thing. I think I've seen it all on this tardiness thing and the absentee thing. I have gone to a committee and the chair, I won't know names, in the long gone, but the chair didn't show up. You know, the public was sitting there and the chair didn't show up. And we get things that confront us and we can't help it. Sometimes we're late. There's, you know, like today, I think, and Representative Seaton had a visitor commissioner and just couldn't be here on time. But generally speaking, you know, it's a statement of respect for each other, for the public that's here. Try to be on time. Let us know if you can't be here for some reason. It would be very appreciative. far as the traditional process of how we handle bills, you know, I mean, it seems silly maybe to go over this, but I think it's a good just to review it. You know, it's worth it. The traditional process is there. We get sloppy sometimes, but I want to just talk about what we strive for as a committee. We start with. By the way, if you have any questions or if I miss something, those of you who've been here and have pointed out, but we start with the sponsor presentation on a bill. They come in, they sit down, and they talk to us. They have a prepared statement. What we shoot for is questions only. When the sponsor is sitting there telling us what's in the bill, our goal is to get them to get as much information on the record so we can go back and review it to see what's really there. So try to stick with questions. It's not the time for debate. It's not the time to endorse the sponsor or to make lectures or anything like that. We try to get the information out by questions. Of course, that's pretty gray. You know, I mean, the most powerful debate tool is a question. I mean, after all, you know, so we're going to slip on that. But generally, just keep the intent in mind that the idea is to get the information out there on the table. And it's respect for the sponsor, too, to give them a fair shot at making their presentation, you know, in an unbiased setting as possible. Or we don't advocate. Thank you, Representative Sisson. I know you have to go. Or we don't have to endorse or debate with them when they're making their presentation. Get the information out there. We ask that you go through the chair. You know, you're all very familiar with that. Very good reason for that, because if you get discussion going between various committee members and the whoever's at the table, it gets lost real quick. So when you want to speak, you know, try to get my eye, you know, pound the table, whatever, and I'll certainly let you ask questions and talk to whoever's in the hearing chair. It's important, again, to be very specific, partly for the recorder, but it's also, you know, the mic's on, it's hot, and sometimes all of us, you know, we start talking before we think, and we can come up with some pretty bizarre statements, Butch sometimes can help us out, but if he knows what we're trying to say, but nonetheless, try to be specific when you talk, and it's okay to bring in, if you have a particular statement you want to make when we're in the debate section of the bill, it's okay to give a copy of that to Janet and Butch. And also on questions, as the sponsor is presenting his case and we're asking questions, many times you'll find that we all think differently and we'll ask questions that they weren't prepared for, and they'll come back to the committee with the responses. It's good to capture those questions precisely, both in your notes and get a copy to Janet so that we can, as a committee, know that those questions got answered or didn't get answered so we can proceed. Then after the introduction of the bill, the sponsor steps down and we open up to public testimonies. It's the same rules. Mostly it's questions, you know, trying to, we limit ourselves to questions. We let the public speak as much as we can. Sometimes there's so many callers, so many testifiers that we limit the time, but again, it's not a time to debate, it's not a time to lecture. Try to, of course, sometimes you're going to know somebody, you want to say hi, that's just fine, but mostly the intent is to get the information out. And then I'll try to remember, after the last testifier, I'll try to remember to always close public testimony. You know, use the gavel, bang, done. And that isn't to say we can't open to public testimony again later, that often happens. And that isn't, and when the sponsor goes back, of course, we call him or her back up any time to proceed from there. After we close testimony, that's kind of a reminder or a cue for us to begin. We'll start then on debate discussion, you know, and that's the time, you know, we interact between ourselves. And more questions may come up, you know, as that process goes on, in which case we'll try to do what's appropriate, call a sponsor back up, maybe even ask for more public testimony or experts or whatever. Again, in that debate time and discussion time, let's say you have a bill that you are really supporting and you feel like all the data didn't come out in the question, feel free. you know, present it. But again, try to stick with written if you can, you know, so that we can for sure get it. Is there anything I'm missing on that, on the debate? You know, I mean, we, you know, after the, you got the committee action, that's the last thing we do, but that's when we, and you see up here, you got the cheat sheets. If you feel like you want to move a bill, it's in the end of the discussion debate time. You want to, you know, if you want to move a bill, you can say, can I make a motion, and we go in. Anytime there's an objection to any motion, often that what that means is, well, the person, say, Representative Millett objects, I say, well, would you like to talk about your objection? And she would tell us all about it. And if she maintains her objection, then we go to the roll call vote, you know, where we all, you know, decide on what up or down on the, whatever motion it is, including the motion to move a bill out of committee. That was supposed to be quick and just kind of scraping the Milky Way in process, but I would like to ask the seasoned members of the legislature and the new ones, you know, that had just had orientation, if I forgot something or if there's something else that you have a question on or a comment on the process. No? I did that good a job? Maybe
sounds not. Pretty complete to me, sir.
Wow, I'm impressed. Okay, first demo, HB 16, and I believe we have Rena here, do we? All right, we'll go ahead and do the first bill. If you would, when you get ready here, identify yourself for the record before speaking to the bill. It's HB 16, and it's a bill to extend a senior benefits payment program. Essentially, it changes the sunset. That's on there, or addresses the sunset that's on there. So, Rena, if you would identify yourself and go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hawker here.
Representative Hawker, glad you're there.
With your indulgence, may I present the bill telephonically?
Of course. Yes, Representative Hawker. Rena said she's nodding too, so evidently that's just fine.
Well, you know, as we all know, we are only as good as our staff, and she would undoubtedly do a better job, but nonetheless, I'm still the guy that managed to get himself elected.
Thank you, Representative Hawker, and I believe you've identified yourself. Please go ahead.
And thank you, sir. Members of the committee, sincerely want to thank you for allowing the telephonic presentation here of HB 16 this year. And it's truly an honor to be the first bill heard by your committee in the session, and it speaks to the importance of the issue at hand. That is the extension of the Alaska Senior Benefits Payment Program. Folks will recall that this program was established back in 2007, and again, in these times of fiscal uncertainty, it was established with a planned sunset and is currently scheduled to sunset at its end this June 30th of 2011, unless we, the legislature, take affirmative action to extend the program. I was instrumental in drafting this bill originally back in 2007, cooperation with senior agencies, the Mental Health Trust Authority. I was definitely a privilege to be able to bring forward this reauthorization request to your committee. A quick reference on the bill, it's a very, very simple program. And this program is a needs-based program providing cash assistance to Alaska's low-income seniors. Currently, there are just over 10,000 Alaska seniors across the state that benefit and receive payments under this program. It's a tiered benefit system, a system that pays a stipend, a monthly stipend of either $250, $175, or $125, depending on the low-income person's annual income. We've established a benchmark, an objective benchmark that is in fact adjusted annually by the federal government in determining the tiers, the participation in the tiers, that is the federal poverty guideline. The lowest federal poverty guideline, based on the federal poverty guideline for Alaska, a person who is at 75% or less of it receives the $250. A person who is between 75 and 100% of federal poverty guideline receives $175. And if a person has an income between 100% and 175% of the federal poverty guideline income, they receive $125. this may not seem like an awful lot of money to many folks, but it is really an important component of many of these seniors' ability to meet their regular recurring operating payments and like. But I just note and make reference to a handwritten letter that is in your bill packet. And I won't mention the lady's name, but she's 75 years old. And I think that that letter itself just says exactly what this program is all about. It provides a great source of comfort and financial stability to this senior 75 years old in the Mat-Su Valley. So if we look at the demographics of this program, it provides the average age of the beneficiaries is in fact 75 years old. The oldest Alaskan on this program is 105 years old. And it's important to us to, I believe, to continue to maintain a sunset on this program. The purpose of the sunset is that it, in fact, prevents programs from becoming entitlements, again, in this age of financial uncertainty. But certainly at the moment, with the state's large cash reserves and the current oil revenue forecast, that it is just plain good public policy to extend the senior benefits program at this time. The bill before you requests that the program be extended for a second four-year period that would extend it through June 30th of 2015. And I would respectfully ask the committee's support and indulgence in expediting the passage of this bill. It says that it is, this bill will truly relieve the anxiety of the low-income seniors who depend on it across the state, making it one of our priority pieces of legislation early in the session. Respect both those seniors and definitely demonstrates our commitment to taking care of them here. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity to present, and I would certainly welcome any questions members of your committee might have.
Thank you, Representative Hawker. Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hawker, in the FY12 appropriation needed column, could you explain the 1.968 additional that is in there, please?
And through the chair, Representative Herron, yes, sir, very happy to do that. And Representative Herron is referring to the fiscal note provided by the Department of Health and Human Services on this bill. What that is showing is that in addition to the amount that was the carry forward amount in the budget from the prior fiscal year, the budget, in order to meet the payments under this program with the estimated number of participants, would require an increment to the, again, carry forward appropriation, and that increment is just slightly under $2 million. The fiscal note as it's presented is based on the department. I believe it's just simply a 3% straight line growth curve on this. Yep, back to reality is, you know, that is a speculation. I think from the standpoint of looking at the cost to the state, we can expect this program to be operated somewhere in the $20 million range annually, as it has been in the past.
Follow-up, sir.
Follow-up, Representative Herron.
Representative Hawker, of course, I've seen the backup, and it shows how many people are benefiting from this. Is there any guesstimate to how many people are at least are unaware of or choose not to enroll?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, I believe Mr. Kreiner is there from the Department of Health and Human Services who might have better insight on the non-participants than I would have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Hawker, for bringing this bill forward. I'm supportive of it. However, I'm questioning the four-year extension. We have a number of bills that are looking at changing our fiscal regime, which could, depending on which is adopted, put us into deficit. The way this is set up, this would cover two different legislatures. Is your intent to extend this bill necessarily for through another legislature, or would you object to having this be a two-year extension so that the next legislature can assess its fiscal conditions instead of establishing a program that will be an expenditure that they would be obligated to for the entire next legislature as well.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I think we have to keep in mind the difference between the authorizing legislation, which this bill is, and the appropriation of the money to fund the authorized program. This bill, yes, it does extend the program's existence, the statutory existence of the program for 4 years, but without a separate appropriation in an appropriations vehicle, there is no money for the program. So effectively, you know, in every single year, each program that exists in this state must be annually appropriated. So I believe that the 4-year sunset provides an excellent time frame framework. It's been historically established as sort of the minimum life extent of programs through all of the different agencies and programs that involve sunset clauses. So we're being very, very consistent with established legislative policy protocol, and that the ultimate backup that is the one that says, do we have the money, do we wish to continue to actually pay these benefits each year, is in fact made each year by the individual legislatures in choosing what they do or do not include in the appropriations vehicle. So with that, certainly my preference is to see a 4-year extension on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Hocker. I'm going to ask Rena if she has something she wants to add, and I see no other questions.
Well, no, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Then what we'll do is proceed to the department and ask for their for them to come up and answer the question that was asked. And, oh, there was still a question I missed. I'm sorry. Wait just a minute. Representative Millett.
Thank you, Chairman Keller. Representative Hocker, isn't there a provision in the statute for that appropriation, if the appropriation is less than what the senior benefits are? The senior benefits are just lowered to the level of appropriation?
If that is the general rule of benefits paid by the department, I'll be honest with you, I'd have to check and see if we had a radical reduction provision on this one. And again, the agency may well have the a better estimate for that one for you.
Okay. So we'll try again, Department, if you'd come forward.
Thank you.
Identify yourself for the record and then go ahead and answer the question unless you want to restate it. You can, that's fine.
Mr. Chairman, with apologies.
Representative Hocker, go ahead.
Representative Hocker here again, sir. And Representative Millett was, in fact, absolutely correct. Alaska Statute 47.45.301, subpara C, provides that if the appropriations are insufficient to meet the demands of the program, the department may reduce or eliminate the cash benefit available to recipients. So we have, in fact, granted them the statutory authority to be nimble in adjusting to facts and circumstances of their encounter. Thank Representative Millett very kindly for that observation.
And thank you. Very quick response.
For the record, I am Ron Creer. I'm the acting director for the Division of Public Assistance, and I want to thank Representative Millett for that question and Representative Hocker for such a quick response. In response to Representative Heron's question, if I had it correct, the number of low-income potentially eligible individuals who haven't applied, it's very difficult for us to really gauge that. There's many seniors over 65 who aren't eligible for this program, particularly, specifically people that are in institutions. By and large, though, it's difficult for us to make that estimate of how many people may be out there who haven't been reached or for whatever reason haven't applied. I apologize, but that's just beyond our reach.
Any other questions for the department? Thank you very much. We might call you back up if we others, but we have some public testimony. It looks like
I'm not sure. I don't think there's anybody online, but we'll go ahead with what we have here in the room. Oh, we do have some online. Okay. We'll start with, still start with the ones in the room. Is it Denise here?
Yeah.
Denise, would you come forward and identify yourself for the record, please, and give us your testimony.
Sure, thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Denise Daniello, and I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Commission on Aging. And I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 16 on behalf of the Commission, as well as the 10,000 Alaska seniors who benefit from this program. Eligibility for the program, as Representative Hawker described, is based on age. You have to be 65 years of age or older, as well as in financial need. And the senior benefits program, we have found, provides a crucial safety net for many seniors who depend on this program. It's not a large amount of money, but it can make a real difference in a person's ability to be able to afford food, housing, medicine, health care, and other basic necessities. Statewide, less than one in five seniors participate in the senior benefits program. And now, this is not a large number of seniors, but it's a persistent minority of seniors who have financial need. And the Department of Health and Social Services recognizes nine regions of the state, and there's a lot of variation in the senior benefit rate participation among the nine regions. In Region 1, which is the Bethel-Wade-Hampton area, this is a region that has long known as a region of high poverty, is the region with the highest senior benefits participation. More than 50% of the seniors who live in this region participate in the program. The Aleutian Islands is another one, which is Region 8, and it also has a very high rate of participation, more than twice the average statewide benefit participation. In Bethel, the cost of living is really high. It costs anywhere from, well, it costs $6.50 for a gallon of fuel oil, 64 cents for a kilowatt of electricity, $6.29 for a gallon of milk. And so if you live in a village outside of Bethel, the costs are even higher. But in other regions of the state, the cost, rate of participation is not the, is lower than the statewide participation, especially in the North Slope borough, as well as in the urban areas of the state. And although we're starting to see some slight increase in the urban areas. Recently, the commission conducted a survey of older Alaskans. We did this statewide as an effort to gather information about senior needs that we're going to use in the new state plan for senior services, FY 2012 through 2015. And we had more than 3,000 Alaskans age 50 years and older responded to the survey, of which 2,836 came from people age 60 years and older. Financial security was a large issue for the people responding. And many of these respondents, in fact, the majority of them, have lived in the state 40 years or longer, so they're longtime Alaskans. And 17.5% of those who responded reported senior benefits as a source of income. When we asked people about what their chief concerns are, financial security was an important concern for 20% of those who responded. That means one in five of these survey respondents said financial security, which tracks well with the statewide participation rate of senior benefits. Also, individuals were asked whether they had difficulty paying for a variety of items over the past 30 days. And the majority of them said no, 63%. But there were still some who said they did have problems paying for basic things, like problems paying for energy costs by 15.7%. 12.5% said they had a hard time paying for medicine and their medical bills. 9.8% said it was challenging to be able to afford food to prepare meals. And 7.2% reported having problems making their rent or mortgage payment. So it's this population of seniors that are in the most, that have the greatest financial challenges that the Senior Benefit Program targets. And we support passage, strongly support passage of this bill. We think it's, believe it's good public policy, and that it helps seniors to, who are the most vulnerable to economic stresses, to live with dignity and independence, which impacts their health and well-being. So we encourage your support of this bill, and we thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Denise. Any questions for Denise? Thank you.
Okay, great. Thanks.
And Marie, you've come forward. No stranger to this committee. Marie is... I don't know what you're associated with ARP, but I'm not sure your title, so you'll have to give that to us. If you would identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. My name is Marie Darlin, and I am the coordinator for the AARP Capital City Task Force here in the Capitol, and live here in Juneau. And you have a copy of our letter of support for this bill, and we have been very involved from the very beginning of the creation of this benefit even, and so therefore are very supportive of the fact of extending the sunset date. And I don't need to repeat all the information that Denise just gave you, because it's all there for people to realize how many people this benefit actually does help. And we just want the 10,000 plus people who are already benefiting from the benefit to have some assurance that it will continue, that they can continue to live here and have some help with all the costs that we know are different depending on what part of the state you live in, for one thing, and all that. But we do want to support the bill with the idea that there are then maybe a lot of seniors who are able to stay and really make it by every month then with the help that they get from the senior benefits. And so therefore we are in support of the bill and urge that you pass it. And I don't have anything else to add.
Thank you, Marie. Any questions?
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. I think we'll go online now. Susanna Morgan, are you there for the Food Bank of Alaska?
I'm here, sir. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
If you would, identify yourself for the record and give us your testimony.
I'm Susanna Morgan. I'm the Executive Director of Food Bank of Alaska. I'm also an officer in the Alaska Food Coalition. And we just wanted to let you know that that some of the anti-hunger groups are also supporting the senior benefits bill, not just groups that focus on the age, on the ages, but all of those who are concerned about folks just having enough to meet their basic needs see this as an important safety net. 44% of the people who go to a food pantry, food kitchen, or shelter every year are over the age of 50. Another 8% are over the age of 65. We know that when we have staff out in the community every day, that they are talking to seniors who count on that those senior benefits to make the difference between being able to get enough food to feed themselves and not. We also know that the percentage of those living over 75 in Alaska is higher than any other state except Utah. So we strongly support Representative Hawker's efforts to keep this program alive, and we'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Susanna. Seeing no questions, Mary Sullivan, are you in line?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mary.
My name is Mary Sullivan, and I'm the program manager of the Senior and Behavioral Health Coalition at Aquila, Inc. I'm an intern at AARP, and I'm a commissioner on the Anchorage Senior Citizen Advisory Commission. And I'm calling to testify in support and agreement with Denise and the others who have shared already for the senior benefits program. One of the big concerns for our coalition is the cost for health care and the cost for medication for seniors. And programs like the senior benefit program allow for our aging population to be able to provide for their basic needs and provide a safety net, as others have already testified. So we are in support of the extension of this benefit program and hope that you will also be in support of it. Speaking to some of the comments that the committee has shared already about the need to focus on prevention and the fact that we do have an aging population, supporting programs like the senior benefit program is one of the ways that we can do that. We know that one of the risk factors for elders as they age is loss of independence, and that loss of independence can contribute to all kinds of behavioral health problems as they age. The senior benefit programs allow people to age in place and remain independent and remain in their homes longer. And so we hope that we will take a preventive course of action and continue to fund the senior benefit program. And I'd be happy to take questions, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mary. I see no questions, so thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Hawker, are you going to remain online as we discuss the bill if we want to ask you more questions?
Yeah, absolutely, sir.
Thank you so much. Is there anybody else online that would like to testify at this time? Is there anybody in the room that would like to testify on this bill? Public testimony is closed, and it's open for debate, discussion, comments. Representative Herron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm more of a question to the sponsor. Representative Hawker, there was an earlier question about the length of the extension, and so a follow-up question is, you explained 4 years. Is there a magic to four? Why not five? Why not three, et cetera? Thank you.
Representative Hawker.
Thank you, sir. Through the chair, Representative Herron. Four was the balance that was struck in the initial passage of this bill, and so we followed the consistent four-year window. Historically, when we do reauthorizations of sunsetting programs, 4 years is the minimum length we usually advance a program unless we have concerns that we want to see addressed within a specific year. So. Again, the real basis for the 4 years was consistency of application and really nothing more beyond that.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
a follow-up, Representative Herron.
No, just a comment. Mr. Chairman, appreciate the dialogue, and it is my intent to support the bill, but appreciate the sponsor bringing it forward.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I am concerned about the four-year. We've had a situation in the past where things were available, especially for seniors, and then the program didn't have funding, and it was a promise broken. The longevity bonus was viewed as it was in statute, and the promise was broken, and we should follow through with what we said we were going to do. So I am concerned about, I'm very supportive of the program, but I am also supportive of the next legislature taking and having the opportunity without breaking a promise by putting something in statute that they would have to come through and cut off. Also, if it was in a sunset mode in 2 years, and there was a need to do that, we could look at the situation. If you look at the backup material, over 50% of the people are in the 100 to 175% range, and there's no asset test currently on this bill. In other words, you can have a lot of assets, but if your income is below that level for the 175%, you qualify for this program. So I think it would give the legislature a better opportunity to review the bill, and if it was necessary to cut down the bill, the fiscal note on it, if we had changed our financial situation, that the legislature would be in a position to be able to come forward without coming through and changing a program midstream and disqualifying people to come through with different qualifications, rather than doing a pro rata amount for those that are the most and the most needy, and that those that might be in a situation where they had a strong asset base but low income. So for those reasons, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to put forward, I'd make a motion to amend line 5 to 2013 from 2015.
I'll object for.
Okay. I wanted you to like to speak to your objection.
Thank you. Through Chairman Keller, I think that I understand your concerns, and nothing prohibits any legislature from making a change to a statute at any time if the asset is a concern. But what gives me great comfort is, as like Representative Hawker pointed out, is the department has a we have it in statute that there's a provision if appropriations aren't available. And I think the seniors know this going in, that if the appropriations aren't available, that there'll be diminished at the amount. The appropriation doesn't cover those folks on the senior benefits program. I like the 4-year extension. It gives great comfort to those who are most in need. I think that every 2 years having to wait for us to do a sunset is probably excruciating for those most vulnerable. And so with that clause in the statute, I think it's 4745.301C, if the department estimates the appropriations for the program are insufficient to meet the demands of the program in the fiscal year, the department may reduce or eliminate the cash benefit available to recipients. I think seniors know that going in. I think it's clear. I think that it would be detrimental to you know, close the sunset date even more. I don't think we're tying the hands of future legislation to adjust the asset portion that you're concerned about. But that's my objection.
You know, want this amendment that we're discussing is whether or not to change the. If I want to restate it, you want to change. You moved that, made a motion that we change the sunset from 2015 to 2013, and so with cutting it to 2 year instead of the 4 year sunset that's been proposed by the sponsor. I just want to add parenthetically, this has nothing to do with the bill. If I might, this is a housekeeping matter. Typically, what happens when there's an amendment, the person making the amendment talks with a sponsor. In this case, that happened. I know that Representative Hawker and Representative Seaton have talked about this, and we just chose to discuss it here in the committee. But I would just encourage all the committee members that when you see something like this in a bill, do like Representative Seaton did and talk to the sponsor. That being said, done with a parenthetical statement there, my comment is I also support the 4-year. Leave it the way it is. And it's partly because of the language of the bill. Leaves it open. And just seems like it would cut our workload a little bit in 2 years. And I think if it gets to the point where we're needing to cut this program and not appropriate, I think that we'll have lots of problems. And I think the seniors will be engaged to help us meet those problems just like everybody else. So I support leaving it just like it is. So any other comments on this proposal? Everyone, Seaton.
Well, in wrap up, I think that we, those of us that were in the legislature when the longevity bonus termination took place, found that it is not the same starting a program or having a sunsetted program versus terminating benefits that are seen as a promise. And seniors aren't going to look at, oh, you can adjust things, or it's an appropriation every year and so you might not do it. I mean, they're going to look at, this is a guarantee that for 4 years, and it's going to be a broken promise if the legislature comes in and doesn't fund it fully. That's the way most people are going to see it. Also, I see the language in there as not giving the flexibility to the department to reduce the benefits for the people that have 175% of poverty and a large asset base, and not reduce those that are in the less than 75% of poverty. I think that that's something that would have to come through the legislature. And so I think it's much cleaner and easier to do in, like we are right now. We had 4 people testify from across the state. So this is a sunset, this is here. There has not been a huge consternation that this program is being there. People want it, but it's not as if it's been a surprise or anything. So that's why I support the 2 years, because I think that it gets us there. I'm supportive of the program. I just don't know what our situation is going to be 2 years from now, and we'll have a new legislature just like we are coming here now and looking at the program and saying, do we need to revise it so that the, if our fiscal situation is different, so that the neediest of seniors will be able to have the full benefit, and those that are at the other end would be chopped instead of a pro-rata cut against. So, you know, I am supportive of the program whichever way it goes.
Any other discussion on the amendment? If it's okay, I think I'm going to allow Representative Hawker to comment. Typically, the amendment is the whether adopt or not is a prerogative of the committee. But I think in this case, I'd like to give Representative Hawker a chance to reply if he would like to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hawker here. I believe both yourself and Representative Miller spoke eloquently to the concerns I share. I also am a very strong supporter of the four-year extension. And I would only emphasize the point made by Representative Millett that we, the legislature, have made it extremely clear, in fact, I would argue crystal clear, in both the passage of the original bill in 2007 and in bringing forward this bill, about these programs being subject to annual appropriation. I think that's something that is very different today with the public's awareness of our fiscal situation, awareness of how legislative process works, than it was when the original longevity bonus was passed, which was really intended to be an entitlement for pre-statehood seniors. And I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, or excuse me, poor choice of words, I don't want to go down that rabbit trail too far. But the point is, this is a very, very different circumstance. Everyone understands that it will only be funded if there are the ways and means to do it. And I know that myself and many of us stand with the firmly with the belief that with $13 billion in the bank at $90 a barrel of oil, I really believe that the next 4 years we're not going to be depriving low-income seniors of this program by either reduction or elimination.
Thank you. I just, before I ask you if you're going to maintain your objection, I just want to say that while I'm going to be voting against this proposed amendment, I want to say that I appreciate the fact that Representative Seaton brought it up. To me, one of the biggest crises ahead of this committee and the state in general is entitlements and the expansion thereof. And I'm just grateful for the fact that the sunset is in there. Therefore, this is not an entitlement expansion. It is a expansion of spending. There's no doubt about it. But I'm just grateful for the fact that the sunset is in there, and I will be voting against the amendment. So do you maintain your objection? Would you call the roll, please?
Representative Millett?
No.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Herron?
No.
Representative Dick?
No.
Representative Sisna is not here. Representative Miller?
No.
Chair Keller?
No. So, yeah, with that, the amendment fails. Is there other discussion or comments on the bill itself? I would try, if there's any open questions, to not pass a bill the same day it's brought up. I think it's a good policy to move slow. In this case, I just don't see any open questions much left. I would entertain a motion.
Chairman Keller? I move HB 16 from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Seeing no objection, we've just done our first business of the year, and they're rather dramatic at that.
So. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hawker, I would like to very sincerely thank yourself for hearing this bill. You're expediting it, and I sincerely appreciate the members of the committee assistance with this. And on behalf of Alaska's low-income seniors, I thank you all.
Thank you, Representative Hawker, and thank you to the committee. Is there any other comments that the committee would like to make before we close? Again, Thursday, we'll begin the overview from the Health and Social Services. Give it some thought, so you may have some questions, and bring those. Thank you, and the meeting is adjourned at, 4:35? I can barely see the clock. Thank you.